Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 703. This episode is Leo Laporte, who's promoting Twit, which is its 10th year this year. And Leo's a guy that we've communicated from afar for the past several years, ever since I started working at Wired and G4. Leo and I would sort of lob comments over to one another like, hey, we should get together sometime, we should do this. But Leo's a wonderful man and brilliant and he's so at the forefront of technology and stuff that's great. So I really was thrilled that we were able to get him on this episode. He happened to be down in Los Angeles, and eventually I'll get up and do an episode of Twit. So thank you, Leo Laporte. This actually was supposed to go up Friday, but I was being sucked into the undertow of Comic-Con. So Friday night rolled along, and I ran into Katie Levine at Comic-Con, and she was like, you know you were supposed to send me an intro to post an episode today. I was like, no! Comic-Con! So I apologize to Leo. This is actually supposed to go up a few days ago, so we're getting it up as quickly as we could. This is Leo Laporte, episode number 703. Katie, roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Take your shirt off first.
Oh.
Just keep dropping the stream every time we come back. Someone else's shirt is up.
Is it strip poker?
No.
What's going on?
It.
What,
no
are the,
mention
what is the game
it.
Being played
strip
here?
Strip podcast.
Strip podcast. That's actually a good idea.
Yeah, it would be a really great idea for an audio form of media.
Yeah, right. Right.
You're just capitalizing.
Actually, that's how Stern.
On the greatness
made
of Stern. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The guy's playing the piano with his dick. No, yeah. He's not. Yes, he
never,
is.
But Howard never took it off.
Mm-mm.
He was always making other people take
probably
it off.
Wise.
What was it making? They were all willing participants.
Probably wise.
I apologize for this, but I do feel like for anyone to be on the podcast right now, me firing up all this stupid technology, that you would be the okay person.
Oh, I couldn't care less.
It's already at 100%, yeah. Chris. You're good.
Oh, it is at 100%.
Yeah. Why don't you put that back on?
You have good people.
I do.
I have people.
Oh, what? I'm kidding.
I'm not your people.
Wait, you are my people. We're both white guys. You're my people. Thank you for coming on.
Is he white?
Matt?
Me?
Well,
me. I'm Mediterranean.
Swarthy. Yes. You're swarthy is what you are.
It's not Spanish, Portuguese, and Italian.
Yeah, you're Spanish and Portuguese, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Italian.
And Italian. A little bit of Italian.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very
but
much.
But Matt, one of Matt's biggest crosses to bear is that his last name is pronounced Myra.
Yeah.
But of course, in Los Angeles,
Mira.
Where there's a large Latino population, it's Matt Mira.
Mira.
And yeah. So it's never, he always has to
never
go,
works.
It's Myra.
I mean, there's like rare times where people will get it, like always in England. they pronounce, like they check into a hotel, they pronounce it correctly.
Huh.
So
they don't say Moira?
Nope. They say, Mr. Myra?
Well, you understand, Leo. A la porte.
La porte. I get that a lot.
Leo, la porte.
I get that a lot, yeah.
Because people feel like they're, I think people feel like they're being culturally sensitive.
Exactly.
If they're like, oh, I'm going to say this like, a la porte.
La porte.
But no, la porte. La, yes. La porte works
better. Hard of the week.
Hard of the week.
Hard of the week.
Hard of the week. Actually, because the English ancestors dropped the E when they came over here for some reason. I don't know why they were like, nah, that's a vestigial appendage on that name. So they just dropped the E.
Were they candle makers? What did...
they? I actually think Hardwicks were. I think the etymology of the name has something to do with livestock herders or something. Like, it's not. And then when they came over to America, they were just fucking hillbillies. Like, my dad's side of the family were just redneck hillbillies from Alabama.
And really?
Yeah, it was. They were just.
When I looked into it, my Spanish side, they were all cigar makers.
Nice.
And then my Italian side, they were all
why do you do air quotes with the cigar makers?
Because I don't really think they were all cigar makers.
It's like the olive oil company.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. We all make cigars.
Garbage collection.
Key West. Yeah, that's what we're doing here.
Green cigars filled with white cigar powder. Are you periscoping us right now?
I am.
That's very exciting.
Hi.
Oh, you're meerkatting us.
I decided to go with a meerkat.
You went with meerkat?
Periscope was crashing.
I went periscope. I usually go periscope.
It's the same, right?
Well, I've been working with Twitter for a while, and so right. I beta tested Periscope for a while,
right.
and I really liked it, and also I like the integration. And right. But right. As someone who's been doing this for 10 years now, you know that these types of things are very polarizing. As you see here.
Oh, my God. People debate on GIF versus GIF.
Which side of the fence do you fall on?
Oh, you see, I knew you'd do that.
I think you're a soft G guy.
I'm a hard G.
Yes, me too. Oh,
because
I'm so glad.
It's a graphics interchange form. I don't care what the guy who made it says.
That's what
he
I said.
Get to choose.
That's what I said.
We get to choose.
That's exactly what
We're
I said.
People.
Yeah, I get a lot of the, well, Martin Wilhite, blah, blah,
no,
blah.
Who cares?
And I go, yeah, well, he's not a linguist.
But again, that's a debate that really, it doesn't matter.
Well, you know, like when I ask, because Will Wheaton is on the soft G side of the fence.
What?
And I go, Will, what?
I've lost all respect.
What's the storage capacity of your smartphone? And he goes, oh, 64,000 megabytes. he won't say.
He doesn't say a gigabyte.
He doesn't say a gigabyte the way Doc Brown would have said
he
a gigabyte.
That's right.
No. So in 10 years.
Oh, my God, I feel old.
No. Well, we're all getting older all the time. But 10 years ago when you started, I mean, you were really, this was sort of a proto thing for you. I mean, you were ahead of the curve by a lot.
Yeah, but I was doing radio. So this was just a natural, this is radio, right? The only difference is there's no transmitter.
Yeah, I guess
and
that's
you could
true.
Say twat. Actually, you could say twat on the radio now, I'm pretty sure.
No, you can't. The FCC is still, it's funny.
Twat is one of those words?
Can I tell you that as free as digital media has become in terms of content, except for that one person who's watching on Meerkat, radio, it's like the FCC has almost reacted
backwards.
Harshly in the opposite direction.
We do our stuff, though, what we call family friendly. We try to keep the FCC rules.
Right.
Because we don't, you know, what we're doing is different from what you're doing. You're doing comedy. You're doing fun stuff.
I mean, you don't need, if you're talking about tech, you don't need to be like.
Yeah, and we want kids to be able, we want parents to feel comfortable letting their kids watch. So that's the only reason.
Right.
I mean, an occasional expletive will emerge. A fleeting expletive.
In what are these instances? Are they.
I get pissed off and I say, fuck you.
Right. What pisses you off the most? What?
Spoilers is a big one. That's right. A big one.
Right.
You know, so you're a comic, and I've been thinking about trolls. You have trolls, I'm sure. We all have trolls. We have a terrible troll.
An infinite number.
But is it the same as a heckler? I think it's the same as a heckler.
Well, here's the thing. It's an excellent point that you bring up, because a lot of comics will deal with trolls because we see them as hecklers.
Yeah.
And then people go, don't feed the trolls. And
right.
You're like, but I'm trained to.
Right.
Like, this is what I...
You can't ignore a heckler.
This is part of our sport, you know?
Right.
Like, it's part of our sport to... If someone heckles you, you go after them,
right.
And then that's...
But you usually eviscerate them as well.
Well, you hope that you do,
right.
or at least you get them to a place where they... Because some people are... In a stand-up environment, you meet very few chaotic evil hecklers whose sole purpose
is chaotic evil on Twitter
to light the the room on fire. Yeah. Most of the
time, they think they're funny.
Most of the time, they think they're helping.
Yeah.
And I talk to the audience a lot, so they feel like they can talk
back.
I'm
just participating.
But on Twitter, people will seek you out to tell you, you know, 20 different reasons why you're a piece of shit and why everything you're saying is stupid and why you're not this and you're not that and you're dumb and you're stupid. And so really it's just a matter of, you know, but but it is different. But I think a lot of comics treat them like they're hecklers.
The wrong thing to do.
The smart thing to do is just not engage them at all. Just mute them or block them or whatever.
In 10 years, that's the big thing that's changed. And I don't know if it's because the audiences are larger and they're more diverse or because I think, frankly, they're especially Twitter, there are ways that they can do this kind of with impunity. But that's what's really changed. Used to be, I feel much more, you have this experience as a community of aligned people. And they were really into what you were doing. And if there were people who disagreed, they disagreed. But there weren't these people who were just there to throw bombs. And that's what's really changed. And it's changed a lot even in the last couple of years. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Well, it's you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, everyone has a voice now, which is great. Which on one hand you think, oh, well, our society is completely democratized now because everyone has a voice. But the downside is that
everyone has a voice.
Everyone has a voice. And so people are reacting to a lot of wrong information. People are attacking.
I always felt it would sort itself out, that if you turned over every rock, the light would shine and good would triumph. I'm starting to wonder if that's the case.
Do you know what the light is? The light is accountability.
Right.
So if you shine the light of accountability on people, then it writes itself because, you know, a small percentage of people, if they had to represent themselves as who they were,
that does work,
would still go, no, fuck you anyway.
Right.
But most people would be like, oh, no, what? Right. I didn't, you know, because it's the anonymity factor that allows people to act out and basically let these avenues be a vessel for their unhappiness and for their rage. But I don't know. I think you kind of have to ignore it, but it's hard to sometimes.
Hey, I want to really apologize because you deserve to talk to President Obama. and instead you're talking to me. And I feel like that's really not fair.
Can I tell you, I have more in common with you than I have with President Obama?
I wouldn't know what the hell to ask him.
You know, I think, first of all, I think if they don't force Mark to go through a bunch of, like, I feel like, you know, I know that the White House has one team, the same team that let him do the Between Two Ferns, which I think was brilliant.
Yep.
And I think they did
allow. So what did they go to Galifianakis and say, you can say this, but you can't say that? Do you know?
Actually, I don't think they did. I think they kind of just let it play how it was going to play. And I think.
But Zach's pretty benign. He's not going to challenge.
Well, but Zach isn't pretty. Zach is not benign, actually. I mean, he's.
He acted. He didn't do anything. The president was there to make a point about what was it, the youth.
It never would have occurred to me to say, how do you feel being the last black president? Like, that never. Like, when he asked him that.
That's a great question.
And then Obama was like, so you really thought Hangover 3 was a good idea? You know, it's like watching them razz each other.
That was awesome.
Now, if they allow Mark to be Mark.
That would be great.
Then it's going to be really good because Mark's very
he's
very good. But if it's a bunch of and
it's a balance though, isn't it? And the advanced man's got to be just shitting bricks.
And of course, someone like you and people like me go, well, what would I ask in that situation? And I feel like I would be asking not political questions. I would be asking all of the human questions because I would want to know what is the humanity of the presidency versus the politics of the
much
presidency.
Much more interesting. Yeah.
What is it like? When you're young and you're hungry and you want to make change and then you get yourself into a position which is probably not as easy to change as you thought, what compromises do you make?
That's the question to ask
because
Obama.
It's not anything that you would know unless you were in that position. What else would you ask him?
Well, that's exactly right. You know, the first day in the office, you sit down in the Oval Office, they give you the briefing book. Do you look at that and go, oh, crap?
Right.
Do you say, forget what I said, because this is far worse. You know,
right.
We got to spy on everybody. Must have happened. Something like that happened. Either that, or somebody said, "Mr. Obama, you may be under the impression that you are running the government,
right?
But in fact,
I am a cigar maker.
As a cigar maker, I feel I have some input here."
I just think that
One of the two happened, right? Something happened.
Well, of course. There's no way because there's a million things. I mean,
you may want hope and change, but
there are things your best friend doesn't tell you.
Yeah.
You think there are, you know, like. Do you think
George Bush called up and said, hey, Barry, just a couple of things you ought to know before you sit down.
That's what I thought too. Yeah, I don't know.
There's a button under the desk. You push that.
You know, honestly, I think to even want to be president, you have to be a little crazy.
Know. And you know going in, don't you? He's not a naive fool.
No, because he had to. He came up in like he was a political figure.
No. I mean,
like you know, coming up in politics. That things aren't always what they seem, right. And things are gray, and you make
compromises. So you promise people what they, you tell people what they want to hear, because that's how you get elected,
right?
But you know, you must know in your heart, I can't do that.
And also, when your theoretical constituency is 350 million people, you can't. How can you possibly satisfy?
You want 51%. That's all you can do.
You cannot possibly satisfy everyone, and you know, I'm sure anyone, you know, if someone has like five kids, I'm sure they understand what it's like. Oh, you take away from this, and then this kid wants this, and you give this one this, and then that one wants this, and then they're, you know, like even if you go over here to help one kid, why are you paying attention? You know, I mean, so multiply that by 350 million, and I can't
even imagine.
And it just seems
you saw when he tweeted for the first time,
right?
The horrific racist stuff that followed.
Anonymity. It's like it's because people didn't, you know, because
and he must
have
known.
To be accountable.
He knew that was going to happen, and it's pretty courageous if you ask me that.
Well, I mean, at the point where you're president, I think hopefully you can just go like, why don't you go fuck yourself?
I have a nuclear arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you, what have you done with your life?
Yeah, right.
Other than make shitty comments on social media. Like, you know, say what you want about any president. It takes work to get there. It is not an easy path.
And I think it's $1.5 billion now.
Jesus. That's crazy.
That's what's crazy. That's what's, you know, though, every radio and TV station in the country is grateful. They love election season.
Oh, my God. Of course.
It's huge. It's a windfall for them because those rates are, they pay the full rate. They don't get a discount.
And
they may not pay the bill, but they don't get a discount.
I mean, it's basically just throwing a den of lions, a pile of antelopes. I mean, and then just letting them sift through every little,
take what you want.
Every little piece of it. I mean, it's so. Our news is it's so interesting the way news has gone now, because it's so much merged, you know, like the blogosphere has now spawned, like, not that that's a term that people use anymore, but that sort of spawned a whole different style of crowdsourced user generated news, and so the lines between what's news and what's just editorializing are, you know, and now news outlets are, they kind of have to editorialize because
they're making shit up just like everybody else.
Because
exactly.
They know that
that's what people want.
Yes. And that's what gets ratings and that's what drives dollars. And so
that's kind of sad to me.
It's unfortunate that there isn't some.
You need a priesthood. You need like a monastery.
Yes. Yes.
Where people don't care about clicks. They care about the truth.
You need, if, you know, it's unfortunate that the billionaires of the world don't get together and just put a fund aside for a news organization that does not have any.
I kind of wonder if that's maybe, I'm hoping, maybe I'm just an optimist. Jeff Bezos, remember he bought the Washington Post. Chris Hughes, who's a Facebook billionaire, bought the New Republic, I want to say. These guys, you got to think they have enough money they could, it's cheap, journalism's cheap, relatively, that they could just say, look, could do good work.
Right.
Don't worry about the views. Don't worry about the subscriptions. Don't worry about the downloads. Just do good work.
The problem is I think it's such a – there's the issues are so complex that they're – like many of them are black and – like there are a lot of black
and white
issues.
Well, you got two branches. You got to have the reporters who do facts. They got people just do facts. This is the facts. No journalism, no editorial, just – well, that is journalism. Here's the facts. You still have to have your pundit, your analyst, and that's, you know, that's what we do. We don't actually generate any news on Twitter. We just – comment on it. We analyze it. We give you context for it. But you need both. But you do need people reporting on the facts.
But
right?
Don't you think that the idea of what a fact is anymore is hazy because you don't. I mean, you know, when.
Well, what, something's true or not, right?
There are some things that are true, but it's finding the truth through all of the muck.
That's a challenge.
And when you have to go through so many different hands and opinions and different voices, and then.
That's why it's an important job.
I mean,
and a tough one.
When you consider that.
Is there a reason you just put $100 on the table?
Oh no, it just was. It's 40.
Okay.
And it just it was. Just,
by the way, that will not. I just want to tell you that will not get you a marijuana card.
What?
It says $40, but it's not $40.
That's false advertising.
That pisses me off. You go down if you go down the you know down to. I'm sorry. Am I derailing?
No. You should derail with the.
Venice. You go down to Venice Beach. They got this. I won't say the name, but it's got a lot of people in green. And it and $40 marijuana card. Mm-mm.
What is the?
I think it was $700 by the time we were done. I not that me by the time the person who did that was
right.
It wasn't me.
Right,
but looked a lot like me.
Mario yeah. Laporte.
Mario, my cigar maker brother.
Mario Laporte.
It's kind of a scam.
Can't a man kind get the weed for $40 anymore?
They said, no, that's for the consulate. It's actually, the whole thing is fascinating. Have you done this? No, you probably haven't.
No.
It was a reportorial expedition. So you go in, here's, first of all, you pull out the $40, just like that. That's what made me think of it. It was sitting on the table. They said, put your money away. We won't need that till the end. And now I know why. Then they take your driver's license, say, you won't get that till the end. Now I know why. Then they take you on a 2-mile walk practically to the doctor, who is this, who's like 80 years old. He's about 4 foot tall. He was eating a hot dog. He had a
nitrates on it, keeping him going.
Yeah, he said, oh, and 2 cans of Coke with sugar. And he's sitting there and he's eating. He's got a little bread on his lip. And he said, all right, what do you want it for? I said, sleep. Okay. Anything anxiety? No. Stress? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And then the reason I know this, I had a friend with me and she did it too. Did exactly the same thing with both of us independently. Stand up. He has a stethoscope on. He's a doctor.
Sure. They're
all wearing white coats. They're stethoscopes. It's very professional.
Yeah. I mean, you can't get those unless you're an official
the posters
doctor.
Of Bud on the wall.
Sure.
And then he says, okay, breathe. Put, I'm going to listen to your heart. He puts a stethoscope on my upper right shoulder, which even I, without the medical training, I don't know what he's listening to, but I don't think there's anything there.
I think your carotid artery might be
maybe,
up there, right?
Could be. Yeah. Could be an artery something.
Sure.
Then he says, turn around. I want to listen. And he says, breathe with your mouth open. Okay. He says, great lungs, great heart. It's good. What do you do for your lungs? I said, nothing. I just breathe. He says, all right, here. And he signs it. Does exactly the same thing with the woman
sure.
with me. Exactly. Down to the great lungs. The whole thing. She does have great lungs. Then you go and you go in a waiting room. In fact, that's what I told the doctor. Said, my wife exercises a lot. That's why my lungs are great. You go into the waiting room. And then a German lady, like, big, tall. She says, come with me. And you go into the room, they close the door. And she says, okay, now, you'll pay, it will be $400. I said, wait a minute, I thought I said $40. She said, no, that's for the consultation. If you wish the certificates, that's another $300. You can have it for 3 months, 6 months, or a year. And you know, oh, yeah, I'll come back here and do this in 3 months. No, I'll take it for a year. And then you want to, look, you get a card.
So you,
which
you,
I'm told, by
so
the
your
way.
Certificate is basically like subscribing to antivirus software.
Exactly. Yeah, but you must renew it. And then the card, it turns out, is useless. It doesn't. You bring it to the dispensary. They say, no, you don't need that.
Where's so you basically just give them $400
the
for no reason.
Of
course.
But look at that. Isn't that nice? That's a good picture.
That's a nice.
I look a little high in that picture.
That is a nice picture right there.
So
and it's
I'm
hard
telling
plastic.
You, it's hard
so
plastic.
That means that it and it's
that got, was what was that $80? That was expensive.
Yeah,
the whole thing's don't anyway. I'm just telling you, just kind of a
wow, what
consumer
are they using
service.
Over there, an Epson? That's great.
Yeah, fine Epson printer.
Now the front says the front has the full URL right there.
Oh
dot,
yeah, very
com,
important.
But back here .co they didn't put the M.
Off.
Nah, they didn't give a shit.
They don't really don't.
I don't care.
That you know you noticed that I didn't notice that. By the way, that's the doctor. Nice guy.
Yeah.
If you ever want to get a good hot dog on Venice Beach, he probably knows where to go.
he's right now. He's got his stethoscope on the hot dog, and he's asking it to breathe.
I should have known because they had a medical certificate on the wall, but it looked Xeroxed.
That's
is that weird.
No,
can you use it? Is that count?
To be fair, it could have been printed out in an all-in-one. It didn't necessarily have to be Xerox.
That's right. Probably could have been, the same printer they did this.
Yeah, with. Yeah, exactly. Because a PDF or faxed it. I think this idea of where truth lies is very interesting.
But you don't – there is absolute truth. I mean there's something – stuff
somewhere
is true
there is, but it's
hard
finding
to get.
What that is. I mean especially
– not interposing your own belief.
Of course.
Yeah.
And
I mean, when the idea that the most widely accepted encyclopedia right now is a crowdsourced website.
You know what, though? It's good.
It's mostly good.
There's some stuff. How's your entry? Is it good?
I have to check it every so often because it's not good.
Somebody said I wrote for Hustler for a while. that's a really strange, I mean, thing to put in there.
You know, you're hoping that the... I think the reason that it might not be 100% good is because with the breadth, the size of the organization, of course, we're talking about Wikipedia, you know, it's basically a crowdsourced organization.
But that, to me, that is an example of the best of what the internet is all about.
But when you think about how many pages and entries are on there...
But they have very committed editors who are checking this stuff. I think they do a very good job.
I think for the most part they do a good job, but I feel like a lot of things... like there were things on my profile that were wrong and I couldn't get them changed.
You're not supposed to touch it, right?
I'm not allowed to.
Right.
Even though those things were wrong, and so it felt like, oh, you're more committed to your rules than you are the actual truth. I'm telling you what the truth is because it's me. But you still, it's...
They need a source.
They need a source.
Not you, obviously.
And so,
what you do, you give an interview, and then you quote the interview.
Occasionally I'd have to go through on the podcast and go, this is right, this is wrong, this is right.
And there's a source.
And they could source it.
Wow.
But because you don't know who the person is who's editing your page, you know, some of these people, not all of them, but some do power trip.
Orange Mike.
We went through we had a run in with a dude who wasn't familiar with the podcast, but didn't like that on our podcast Wikipedia page someone was listing episodes, and he felt like that was junking up the page. So he took it upon himself. And by the way, when you go to this guy's profile, it's nothing but junk.
Right.
It's all these achievements that it looks like a digital attic. Yeah. And so
digital attic.
And so he took it upon himself. So he made the person who kept trying to put it back on start a separate page that just listed the episodes, because in his mind – and that's where it gets murky, is because that was his interpretation of Wikipedia law. Someone else would have something different, but we just happened to get this guy that had a bug up his ass and felt like, well, I'm going to go correct this thing that I'm not personally involved with.
In general, for the most part, it's worked out pretty well. I mean, I know a lot of schools won't let kids use Wikipedia as a source, and in many cases, it's more accurate than the sources they're using.
But aren't you worried that as someone who is a journalist, that if you rely on Wikipedia for your information?
Oh, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, okay, well, there you go. And so, but on the one hand, you say it works, but on the other hand, you say you wouldn't rely on it.
Well,
so.
It depends on the role. I mean, I read it all the time for background. It's great.
Sure.
When you're interviewing somebody, you read their Wikipedia entry sometimes.
You get some good background.
Great stuff.
Have you been in a situation where they're like, well, that didn't happen?
Well, actually, sometimes I'll ask people, is that true?
Right.
Most of the time it is, which is interesting. I don't know. I actually give them money every month. I think that's to me, there's a few things on the internet really show what the internet can do, and that's an example.
What's the other one? There's only two.
I think that's the one.
No, Hustler.com.
I did write for them for a while. Now I've just validated that, haven't I?
Now they can source
it.
You
know, in the Nerdist podcast.
He said that Leo clearly says.
He said that.
Yes.
Yeah, no nuance in Wikipedia. There's other things. I think I'm sure I'll come up with one.
I think there are communities that are – I think there are communities that are ultimately committed to good, but nothing is ever going to be 100%.
Right. One of the things that happens is as more people get involved, it always goes downhill.
Sure.
The small, select – that sounds elitist, but I don't mean it to be that way. When Twitter first started out, it was just kind of like-minded people. It was great. And then everybody gets in there, and it becomes like the real world, which is a mixed bag.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's – you especially see that on Reddit, that it's
– oh, it's sad what's happening to Reddit.
It tends to be better when you go – the more specific the subreddit.
You pick your subreddit. Stay there.
Yeah. And you know why? Because it's accountability.
Yeah.
Because the smaller communities are more accountable.
That's probably it. You're right.
I did stay there, but we got shut down.
And did you have a subreddit and you got shut down? Oh, you're the fat people guy.
I loved it.
I thought so.
Fun.
You know, there's an interesting, and I'm sorry to talk about corporate structure again, but there is this idea, you know, when Richard Branson was kind of building Virgin, when an office size would get to a certain number of people, and the number was like
150, it's 150 the Dunbar or number.
That they would branch it off and start a new office, because they felt like any number of people above that, and then people start to disappear and they're not accountable to one another.
That's right.
And so it really is about
fostering your specific community versus trying to
I think that's true.
Appeal to the mass.
Don't you think that's
masses.
True?
I do. Yeah. I do, because when you get into the larger subreddits, if you're just in like our videos or our pics, the threads are so much more disheartening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
no, if people are there and they're in it's like a garden. If they're tending it, they're upvoting the stuff that's good, yeah. and it's people who really care about it, you really get a much better and then you get a great experience. It's a phenomenal experience.
Now tell me about the
I'm Android Wear. Now see, I could have worn like I see you both got Apple Watches. Mm-hmm.
I do, but I also just got the 5 Pebble watches in the mail from
You got your Times?
I did. I just got them in the mail from I contributed to the,
yeah.
to the Kickstarter.
Yeah, they just shipped. Yeah.
Ridiculous, amazingly, you know, $10 million Kickstarter for the Pebble watches. But now I have 5 Pebble watches and I'm like, "Oh, I don't know.
I don't remember.
You only got 2 wrists. What are you going to do?"
The Pebble watch was they did the first round they raised.
So I did the Kickstarter for that. That was the most successful Kickstarter.
It's a few million dollars, right?
It was 3, I think.
$3 million.
To date.
It was basically what's on your wrist now, but an open source, like...
It could do Android and iPhone.
Yeah.
But it was more limited. It used a weird e-ink technology.
And so then they did a second round of kickstarting, and then they raised $10 million. Yeah. And I don't know,
That was controversial because...
Why would they need that, though?
Yeah, that's the controversy. Yeah. Is that Kickstarter is starting to look like a place that people already have the money go just to say, well, let's pre-sell it and get some excitement, get some marketing.
Yeah.
This is a good topic then. Because I see both sides of that where I go, well, people are adults. If they want to contribute money to something, you can't say you're using Kickstarter wrong, because ultimately it's for the community that wants to
Kickstarter
contribute.
Says, and they really want to make this clear, we're not a store.
Yeah.
But a lot of people treat it like a store. Like,
right.
Oh, good. I got to get that new Pebble. I'll go to Kickstarter and buy it.
Lock it in.
You're not buying it. You're
because it hedges their bets against having to potentially be in a situation where they have 10,000 Pebble watches.
There is
also such a weird sort of way to like get seed money,
right?
In the sense of like normally when people get seed something, they're getting equity or you know a royalty or something
you
like
nothing.
That. In return, you get nothing.
Well, you get the watch.
Yeah, maybe
you get the product.
I've not committed to that.
Not always. Yeah.
I'm still waiting for my I got some gaming dice I ordered $100 3 years ago and never nothing.
I think in that sense, you know, Kickstarter is more like eBay where you
well, even on eBay there's more accountability.
Way more accountability
than there is on fucking Kickstarter.
Way more accountability.
You're an adult.
Yeah.
You knew what you were doing?
Yeah.
Well, maybe you didn't. Maybe you thought you were buying it. You aren't.
If someone's selling something and they have like 5 ratings, you don't you don't want to.
I think but you're right that the value that Kickstarter presents is really outweighs the few negatives.
I do agree that it gets a little tricky if big giant companies come in because
it happened too.
We've been in situations before where we wanted to make a film or make something and someone said, "Why don't we just Kickstart it?" And I'm like, "We can't, because the perception will be, oh, you're a company and you're owned by Legendary.
Right.
You're just trying to take money from people and we can't." We can't be perceived
that way. But Veronica Mars, I mean, that's an example, right?
Yeah.
And they raised a lot of money.
They raised $3 or $4 million.
Yeah, and it didn't make it back.
But I think
it really, Warner Brothers was correct.
Yeah.
Not to fund that.
I think in their case, though, I actually
they were getting votes.
I did support that because Warner Brothers basically said to Rob Thomas, "This is a dead property. We're not going to make this.
I'm going to prove you wrong."
Oh, fine. If you can raise money for it, then we'll make it. And so I feel like. I feel like that may have opened the door for larger studios to go, wait a minute.
Right.
But I don't think the intention there was to take advantage of it. I think
there was an audience.
It was just a creator who was tied to a studio that the only way this is going to happen is to reach out to the community. And I feel like that's legitimate. But in other cases, I mean, if you start, you know.
If Apple went and said, we'd like to do a new Apple TV.
We want to give you a $10,000 gold watch.
Yeah. Would you be interested?
Then I think
that'd be a little weird.
Then I think
so. We thought about this too. We built a new studio. We thought we'd go on Kickstarter. Actually, we did. We asked them, and they said no.
Right.
Because we were an established entity. We could have gone to Indiegogo or somewhere
else.
But we actually ended up selling bricks to go on the wall. That worked out great. People got their name on the wall.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it worked out.
Bricks at Disney.
Like at the ballpark or
Disney. Yeah.
What does Disney need money for?
They did, and when they did that, they needed money. They were not like if you go back to Epcot and you walk through right before you get to Spaceship Earth, there's all of these like They look like, you know, the Fortress of Solitude style bricks, and there's these little tiny plates of metal
see,
where people had their
that,
faces on there.
You're thrilled, right?
But they didn't sell nearly as many as they put up, and it just now it looks like it's just this shitty thing they put up for no reason.
Maybe some, there's dead people in there or something. You don't know what's going on.
It's, you know, the, in theory, crowdsourcing is great. I mean, in theory, everything is great if it works at an optimum level.
Right.
I mean, do you remember
except
when
the Holocaust?
Do you remember when Twitter did not good?
I'm with you
at all.
Not good. Everything is good.
Put that in my
bad
Wikipedia.
Theory, bad execution, 100% across the board.
Everything is good.
But the idea that, you know, when Twitter first launched and people still had this, they were coming off of MySpace, where, you know, people go, oh my God, well, if you have a lot of followers on Twitter, I mean, that's going to mean, without realizing, oh, well, it's a different, people consume it differently and it doesn't operate the same way. People don't go just park themselves
at follow
Twitter.
Somebody.
You have to follow.
Yeah.
You have to be able to keep up with the stream. Right.
You
have to.
You know
to
what they're doing. And this is, you know, they're going through tough times. But what they're doing, well, you know this because you know the corporate structure there.
God damn it. Well, I know Dick is leaving in July.
Yeah. And Jack's, I think Jack's kind of, apparently Dick
he's gonna
was
be
behind
the interim.
This. Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Jack Dorsey claims to have founded Twitter, so he like has some kind of interest in keeping that going.
Sure.
But they realize, and I think this is true, that the real value of Twitter is in real-time events, not like whether it's American Idol or Ferguson. Mm-hmm. And what you really want to do is go to Twitter and see what's going on. It's hard to do because it's, you know, it's kind of a mix. So they're going to create a new experience kind of in the middle. You press a button on the Twitter homepage, and you'll see what the big breaking story is, whether it's the Oscars or a big, you know, the Egypt uprising. And you can follow it, and they're going to have live human editors curating it. So they're going to say, these are the great pictures, these are the great tweets.
Oh,
that's smart.
Very
isn't that smart?
I have a lot of
it's
hope for that
smart.
Because whenever I hear live human versus algorithm, I get very excited.
It's better.
Because I've seen
it's made of people.
It's made of people, and I've seen companies who are beholden to the algorithm, and it is a very sexy mathematical thing. Oh, well, if a computer can just tell you what you like, but a computer doesn't know how to give you things that are risky, which you might.
That's a good point, because whenever I go to Amazon, they try to sell me stuff I already bought.
Exactly, yeah. It's like you already. So
I know that.
You know,
I bought it.
We.
That's not risky.
I think one
they offer me some Havana cigars. Some that would be risky.
I think one of the craziest things that happened was, you know, how YouTube used to be. You know, the YouTube homepage used to be curated by humans, and so it was very much.
It's not anymore.
No, it's algorithmic.
Well, they got me last night. I was going to bed at 11. And then they plopped up this video of like John Scofield giving a 45-minute talk about jazz guitar, and I was like, "Oh, watch
that's
that!"
Right. So that for the moment,
they saw you coming.
Yeah, but I was like, "Oh, fuck!" And I was up.
So that's based on your interest because I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Because so a lot of the time they're going to be right. You go, "Oh my God, I already like these things."
Well, Google. That's why Google has such power. They know so much about you. They see all your searches. They see what you buy. Mm. They see what your email says. Yeah.
But they don't know how to surprise you. They don't know.
That's true.
They don't know. You know, like if they know you like jazz and they just keep firing you jazz songs, you know, a human being might go, listen to this country song. I don't really like country. We'll just try. Oh my God, you know, this is actually not so bad.
You could probably solve that by throwing in like a little wild card stuff.
Every once in a while.
Algorithmically do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, any of the music services, you know, a lot of them, you can adjust the, like how tight to my preferences
how fuzzy.
And how wild.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be nice if you had, but I still think, you know,
The truth is, you do want your airline reservation, not somebody else's.
Right.
You don't want to be surprised by that.
Sure. Right.
Right. So the things that they are giving you in like Google Now, that's the stuff that you want to know. Your bills due, your park tier, your airline reservation.
It's like the ad.
It's not recommendations there.
The ad algorithms that they have.
Oh, those
suck. But they're like stupid specific.
Yeah.
That's
a good example.
I'll go on Facebook, and up at the top corner, it'll be like, interested in left-handed guitars at this website? I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess.
I was getting barbed wire ads for a while on Facebook. I don't know why. Duct barbed wire masking tape. I couldn't figure it out.
And did you buy any more?
No, not. Then I went anonymous. No, seriously. I don't. It was like, maybe I live in Petaluma. They think I'm a farmer.
Oh, well.
And they thought I wanted farm implements. It was, but it was, in a way, it was kind of cool. Because usually it just says 58-year-old men in Petaluma like these girls. usually it's just that.
You know,
so.
I donated money to St. Jude's a little while ago.
Yeah.
At Brooks Brothers? They always do that.
Not at Brooks Brothers, no. But St. Jude's, I'm from Memphis. Wonderful organization.
Great organization.
And so what had happened for a while is I was getting a lot of cancer banner ads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everywhere. And yeah. So and it wasn't – and they weren't real – they weren't placed well in the sense that, you know, if like I was reading like an Onion article or just like ooh. As an example, just like reading one and then there's just cancer ads and they're like,
yeah.
Oh yeah, I know it's there. I'll keep giving money.
They're
I promise.
A little too, yeah. I know so, what you
so
mean.
So sometimes the ads aren't respectful.
Right.
Sometimes the places you go aren't respectful of the ads that are placed there. And there is this kind of, you know, this human dissonance that happens.
I think that's frankly what the main reason people aren't happy with Google. It's not so much that Google's looking at what we're doing. It's that they cross the creepy line where they put the stuff.
Right.
You can tell that I'm seeing that ad because of you. You know, and that's what bothers people more than anything else, I think. I don't think people are that worried about Google knowing.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically if you, you know, you buy one thing and then for the rest of the day, a guy's following around like,
you just do a search.
Hey, you want some more Twizzlers?
Right.
No, I
got him.
I am Twizzler wealthy right now. I don't need, I do not
well, how
want
about
for
these
Twizzlers.
Twizzler minis?
No, I don't need them in a different size. I just, you know, I was happy with the ones.
My buddy over here has got a bucket of Twizzlers.
I'm not a bucket fan, and I don't eat food.
Suit yourself.
All right. Yeah, so it is, you know, I do believe. It's trying to find that balance where convenience doesn't become too much of the devil.
Yeah.
Because it is. I mean, ultimately it is. We, you know, we are typically culturally undone by convenience time and time again. A lot of our biggest disasters happens when people get lazy because they want things to be too convenient.
Look at these services. We use Silver Car to get here. They come and get you at the airport and drive you to their place and you get the car. There's this Looks. Have you used Looks yet for your parking? You it's an app. You say I need a valet here wherever you are. You drive down to a shop. They come and they have little blue jackets. They come up on their scooter. They take your car. They wash it. They fill it up, and then you tell them when you want it back, and they bring it back.
What's
to you.
What's this called again?
Lux, Luxe. Wow. It's like talk about convenience. And they do it in San Francisco, and it's cheaper than parking in San Francisco. They have their own garages.
Of course it is. San Francisco
everything
is a goddamn
is
nightmare.
Well, what a solution, because you never find parking. You never find – so you just say, I'm going to be on Montgomery, 6th and Montgomery. Pick up my car. And the little guy in the blue jacket shows up. It's
until
wild.
Until people realize that they just need to go buy a blue jacket and then free car.
Well, they need a scooter, too.
A scooter, too.
A scooter.
You're not going to freak me. You don't have a scooter.
Yeah, you don't have a scooter. How'd you get here?
Does the scooter then – is it one of those fold the scooter?
It's not an official scooter.
Okay.
Some of them have skateboards. Yeah, there's like a Razor.
They have a service in England where if you get shit-faced at a pub, you can call up the service and a guy will come in a motorcycle, like a motorbike that then folds up and goes in your trunk and they drive you home with
That's
your car.
Service.
And then they get out and take their motorcycle and say, see you later. And then.
That's awesome.
Like, why isn't that here?
That should be.
You know, I honestly can't – I think in some senses we're just too big. Our city is too big. Our country is too big to implement things like that on a wide scale.
Right. That's why they're only in certain cities.
Only in certain cities. But
hey, you want some Twizzler? I'm back.
What's going on with Uber right now? And what's going on with Uber and their drivers not being considered contractors?
Yeah,
considered
state of
employees?
California says they're employees.
And so how does that change their...
Well, they have to pay benefits.
So they have to pay... So
it's
Uber
much
has
more expensive.
To pay, Uber
yeah,
has to pay benefits to employees.
I don't think that's going to hurt. Uber's very
they're
successful.
Doing fine.
They're
and you
doing
know what?
Fine.
If that means that the drivers then have to have an extra hoop to jump through to ensure that they're quality drivers.
You and I don't mind that.
It's better for the consumer. Mm-hmm.
Better for the consumer. We don't mind that.
No. No, no, they're doing fine. They're raising a shit ton of money over in China right now or something.
Yeah.
So I think they're...
That's an example. I think that's why you see things like Silver Car and Luke's is that this was such a success that everybody says, all right, this is the... I don't know what you call it, the sharing economy or something, but this is the next big thing. We got to jump on this. You know, you press a button on an app, something great happens.
But Uber had a thing. Uber was lightning in a bottle because, you know, unlike a service like Lyft or any of the other ones, Lux or whatever,
Uber basically took a pre-existing infrastructure. There are drivers who are just sitting in their car. There are professional drivers who are just sitting in their cars.
Unused.
Unused.
That's what you look for, is unused resources.
Let's tap into that. And they spotted that, and that's very hard to do.
I have a friend who's the payphone capital of the United States, the payphone king of the U.S. Payphones.
Still.
So what AT&T used to do payphones.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible business for AT&T. It was only $1.5 billion a year. So this guy goes to AT&T and says, I'll take over the payphones. They still need payphones. There's a lot of places, bodegas, places where people don't have cell phones. There's a huge market for it. They are cell phones, by the way, now.
They are.
Yeah,
they're not landlines.
Not landlines.
Interesting.
They're wireless. And the key to this, get this, the most important technology in this is routing the drivers to go get the coins. Because you need to do this efficiently enough so that it's profitable. Right.
It's interesting.
Yeah, you got to pick up the coins. That's the problem with the payphone. You got to go get the coins.
Yeah.
Pneumatic tubing system.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yes.
The Hyperloop. But he figured that out. And then, so that's a good business. He's doing well.
Uh-huh.
He says, what else can I do with this routing software, this routing technology? He now owns all the Nestle's ice, you know, the freezer chests with the ice cream in
it. Yeah, yeah.
Because you got to service those efficiently, right?
Yeah.
You run out of one kind of bar, you got. And what he did was, they're also wireless. They got the telemetry in them, and they know what the weight is of the whole thing.
Jesus Christ.
And when the weight goes below a certain point, the truck comes
and
services it. It's all software. It's all technology.
The last time I used a payphone, I had to use it because Major League Baseball, I moved out to Pasadena from Boston, and I was trying to use the app, and they do the thing where like you're blacked out if they think your IP address is wherever. And they couldn't, for some reason, couldn't get it fixed. They thought I was still in Massachusetts. My IP, I guess.
They wouldn't
let me watch the Red Sox.
Oh,
so what had to happen was, like, I was like, well, you call my phone. And they're like, well, no, it's a cell phone. You could be anywhere. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I just want to watch a baseball game. I'll give you guys $20 a month. I was like, well, they're like, well, just give us a phone number. We can call you at.
Use a cell phone. I mean, a payphone.
That's exactly what I had to do. I had to find the nearest payphone with this person on the phone in New York. I was like, okay, here's the phone number to this payphone. And then they called me on the payphone, and I picked it up, and I could finally watch the shitty Red Sox.
What happened?
They were like, okay, well, you answered.
No, but I mean, did they win?
Oh, God, no.
Oh, okay. All right.
How's Pablo doing, Panda?
Sandoval?
Yeah.
Well, he liked a picture on Instagram on Wednesday.
Well, you really follow stuff closely.
And, well, it was a violation of league and team rules to like
to a picture. Like a picture?
After 6:30 p.m., all of Major League Baseball players have to go dark social media.
Why?
Because they got to be invested in the game. They can't be checking their fucking phone in the middle of a game. So in the middle of a 5-2 loss to the Atlanta
Braves. If he knew
Braves,
that, why would he?
He said it just slipped his mind. He went to go take a leak in the clubhouse, just picked up his phone, liked a couple of
her
name to like some whatever diva. He liked some lady's photos on Instagram. And they had to sit him a game because they're like,
"Oh my god,
that
that's ridiculous."
You know, this has become
so second nature. Like
you don't even think about what time.
Nobody is bored anymore.
No, but you know what's happening? What we've traded for boredom is
short attention span.
Not only short attention spans, but also we have sacrificed. We have exchanged boredom for time, and what I mean is that because we are distracted at all times, it feels like we are not noticing the passage
of
time.
Your life will be over before you know it.
Which means it's the middle of 2015 and people are going, how is the middle of 2015? It's because your face is in your phone all the time.
It's worse than that.
You're not paying attention.
Boredom is the gateway to creativity. Creativity comes out of boredom.
Right.
And if you're not bored, and no one ever is. You go anywhere. Bus stop, anywhere somebody would normally be just kind of bored.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're on their phone. They're not bored. We're distracted.
Yeah. And we welcome the distraction.
Sure, but we're not writing the next big symphony. You're thinking about what's the painting I'm going
to
make.
You know, to be fair, most people are not going to write the next big symphony.
Right.
I think most people...
They're selling Twizzlers most of the time, I think is what they're doing.
Are selling cigars and Twizzlers. But I think most people are just trying to distract themselves from themselves.
Right.
You know, like you don't want to be alone with what's up in here. You just want to like look at... You just want to look at Instagram and...
You think we're going to look up on our deathbed and go, oh shit, what happened?
Yes, of course.
Or you think we're going to be like, just one last one.
I got to like this.
Ah! Or
his last word.
His last selfie.
Like,
fuck you, Orange Mike.
And then he changes your Wikipedia page postmortem.
I think, when we're all uploaded to machine consciousness.
Can't wait. Looking forward to it.
I have this thing where, and I think like it's a thing that a lot of people have, and it always cracks me up, where you're throwing a lot of, you're barring against future health and happiness by doing things now without really thinking about the consequences. You go, oh, in 30 years, they'll be able to fix that. And I feel like...
I've been saying that for a while
In most cases, that's probably not going to be the case.
No.
That's probably... They're probably not going to be able to cure everything in, you know, within 30 years.
They get to work.
Yeah.
I got a lot
3D
of
3D printed lungs. 3D printed lungs. Let's start smoking, everybody!
I mean, I do feel like that... I do feel like uh-huh. that. Within 30 years, I do feel like
yeah,
that.
You know, though, it's going to happen the day after you die.
Of course.
Son of a bitch.
Someone's going to run in with a 3D printed lung.
I got it.
Oh, we did. Yeah.
Too late.
He just liked his last pick.
Orange Mike already changed his Wikipedia page. He's gone.
I want virtual reality for that. I'm going to be in the home soon.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to have.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, you of can course, tell. Yeah. You look at me. It's obvious, yeah. I want to be able to lie there and just enjoy life, but without moving.
Mm.
Right? Mm. And then it's like real. And
like Surrogates? Like the movie Surrogates?
That would be cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, you'd have to put some... I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, that's starting to get closer to the
have you
Matrix
done, have you
Kurzweil.
Ever used the VR helmet for porn?
No.
Oh, my God.
Yeah? You're just nodding your head.
Hilarious.
No.
Wow.
Is it third person, first person?
First person.
POV, bro.
I'm not sure I know what that means, but I think it's first person.
I mean, are
person.
You watching other people, or does it make
no,
you
you're,
think you're the
you're
well, the
you're the guy or the gal.
Sure.
And I now have a great appreciation for what it's like to be a woman in one of those things. So I don't know how – I can only imagine the way they're shooting this. They have one of these – you know, surrounds cameras like with the performer's head would be
right,
and you're it's immersive. You can look around, you can look up. It's kind of weird because you're getting and you look up. Well, when you're a girl, you look up and there's a guy looking at you smiling, and it's creepy.
Oh well, of course, because you're all of a sudden in
it's
a porn.
Freaking, you're in a porn.
You're all of a sudden in a porn.
But you also do that and you go, I see where this is going. Mm. I mean, you really can start to see surrogates. Absolutely. You can really start to see where this is headed.
Did you see the movie Strange Days?
Mm-mm.
It's a great movie. Late 90s. Ralph Fiennes.
Oh, we started watching it. It was very odd.
It's really cool. And a lot of it has to do with that like POV, virtual reality, like that you can store experiences and memories, but not just watch them back, but you're absorbed. Like you... It jacks into your brain and, you know.
I want that. I want to be able – I mean, maybe that's the solution to all of this Instagramming. I can have other people's experiences.
But what's the difference with it? What's the difference between that and just like getting out and living a life?
That's a lot of work.
But it'll
sweaty.
Be a lot of work in VR too.
Well, no, you're lying there. They're doing the work for
I
you.
I guess so. I don't know, especially because – when is Oculus coming out? Next year?
Early next year.
Early next year.
Yeah.
We don't have a price point on it yet, right?
They said that plus a PC will be about $1,500. So I'm going to say about $500.
Right.
You'd have to have a high-end gaming PC. You do, obviously.
Sure.
I could tell.
I do.
Yeah. I want to see this Microsoft HoloLens might be interesting, although mixed reviews on that right now. That's coming out probably this year. But you can get the Galaxy, you know, if you've had Galaxy phone, you can get the Galaxy VR thing, which is an Oculus Rift device. You put your phone in it. It's a couple $100 for the headset. Mm. And you're looking around. There's a Cirque du Soleil demo where you're in the middle of the Cirque and you're seeing, and then you turn to another performer behind you. I actually leapt to my feet. And started looking around because I want to see. And you look to the performer behind you. And I guess what they're doing is they're all performing to the camera as if the camera's looking at them. Because the minute you look at them, it's like they're talking to you. They're interacting with you. It was really amazing. And the resolution's low. And there's, you know, it's early days yet. But, boy, you really get a sense.
It's going to evolve fast.
Something's happening.
There was I went to a party that a friend of mine threw, my friend Randy Pitchford, and who runs Gearbox. Randy and his wife, Christy, are great, great, great people. And they had this augmented reality demonstration
there. I love AR.
And that was fucking so – it was so –
That I think we're going to all be walking around all the time, and you'll have a I'll see you, but I'll see a thought bubble above your head.
Yes, but when you couple that with a little bit of haptic, like it's such an incredible,
amazing.
I mean, you really do feel like you're like I'm an X-Man, like
right.
You really do feel.
And because you're still in the real world, it's not so disorienting. You don't get nauseous. You really because you're seeing the real world this is what you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Superimposed on the real
yes.
world. So I think that's really compelling.
Yeah. I think it's going to be and
it's a different experience. It's not immersive.
Is Google are they updating Glass?
No. Well, I don't know. That's a big flop, I think.
Yeah.
But Google has bought a number of companies that do this kind of stuff, both augmented and virtual reality. So they're going to be in the business.
Do you think they knew? Do you think this was basically just a big beta test for something
else?
Yeah,
they were collecting data because if you think about Glass, did you ever wear the Glass?
I put it on once.
It's not virtual or augmented reality. It's just a screen over your eyebrow.
Right.
So you're looking around and you look up and you can see a screen.
Right.
So it's as if you have a computer kind of in front of you all the time and
right.
you can refer to
so
it.
So it's not immersive.
It's not even a heads up display.
Right.
So
right.
It's not immersive in that sense. But I do think that they get what they wanted to do was get a lot of, you hit the nail on the head, gather data about how people use that in real world environments. It's a first step towards something else I think that they're going to do.
I mean, I think
well, they're going to assume everybody wants a fedora. So people who would wear Google Glass would be wearing.
I think, you know, if
really they go together, maybe that's
so.
Where I went
I
wrong.
So.
Yeah. Matt's little hipster a, fedora.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Matt's down on the fedora nerds.
Neck
yeah, neckbeards, yeah. The fedora nerds.
Oh, okay. See, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I, you know, if you come to me with an augmented reality contact lens, I may be on board. But
Google has a patent for that.
But I do think that.
That lens, by the way, can also tell your glucose level in your blood. So diabetics can wear it and know immediately how they're doing. That they actually have a patent on that. That is something they're making in their advanced research labs.
But the dangerous part is, do human beings need more things to distract their concentration?
Yeah, now you're distracted all the time.
Like I feel
all
like
the time.
You can't release that until there are self-driving cars. Because
you're good
bingo.
To go. You're good to go.
Okay. Because I know they're working on that too.
Bingo.
I think we're now
putting together the whole plan here.
Yeah.
It's all coming
listen,
to the
I've always, you know, ever since Total Recall, of course I wanted a Johnny Cab.
Yeah.
But if everything has a screen.
You're in a Johnny Cab. Want a Twizzler?
No!
Take me to Mars. If everything has a screen that you use, why do you need yet this other screen in your eye? You know what I mean? Like, why can't something?
No, because
you
want. I want to look at you, and I want to have twat
it's,
appear over your head.
Yeah, it's
you
augmented,
know what I'm saying?
It's augmenting. It's augmented reality, so that you know, you walk. In, so in any scene, in theory,
yeah.
when it's working the way it should,
he's got two children named Don and Lisa.
Yes, exactly. It basically works the same way Terminator's vision works,
right.
where you're
right.
seeing the printout of everything. You're seeing, you know, you walk into a retail establishment. There's no checkers anymore. You see.
Right.
You know, oh, this is this.
That's
and
not working too well, is
you
it?
It's not working. You know, there at E3 a few years ago, I mean, I'm sorry, at CES a few years ago, there was a really, I really thought inductive charging surfaces were going to be
everywhere, like this desk.
Yeah.
I just put my stuff down, it charged.
There was a display there that had these cereal boxes and the shelves, they were approximating a grocery store shelf, and the shelving was all inductive surface. And the boxes were all printed with, you know, with ink that had electric charge in them. So when you would set it on the box, like a box of Lucky on the surface, the box of Lucky Charms would
animate
like a Vegas sign. And I thought this is amazing, you know. And I thought inductive charging service. I thought like getting rid of the wire would be such a big and I'm like in Starbucks now. They have these inductive charging rings that you can put on your phone, and they have surfaces.
You know
but
what, you know
we still
I
haven't gotten it yet.
In the realm of kitchen food sort of stuff is I want there to be sensors in your pantry, in your fridge that know exactly what's in there, and then a display on your
mini bar. That's
but I want a display on your fridge that tells you
what
all
you
of
need.
The recipes you can make.
Oh,
that with the stuff in your
Ooh,
house.
Ooh, I like that.
You know what I mean?
There is
you have pickles and milk.
Yeah. You can make milk pickles.
That's what it's going to end up being.
Maybe you need some Twizzlers.
But you know, I think the best thing about that is seeing the subreddit that develops from the shit that people make based on –
what the, like milk pickles. Like that's
I think the subreddit's called milk pickles. Someone should start r/milk pickles.
It's there. I think it's there right now.
Boom,
to create that. Do you want to plug anything while you're here?
No, this is fun.
You have to come back.
I was very nervous. You had talked to very, very, very big celebrities and Mark Maron's got Obama, and I thought this is like I feel bad, you know.
I'm telling you, I feel so much more comfortable.
This is fun. I'm having a great time.
Of course, if the White House called and said, "Do you want Obama?" I'd be like, "Of course I would." I would also be terrified because I think what's going to be interesting is, you know, Mark's super indie. And Mark is now...
He's also neurotic as hell. And I can only imagine how nervous he's been
about
this.
Mark is now stepping into a world...
Yes,
like,
not so indie.
Watching all the pundits dissect Galifianakis' thing as if it was
Mark has no idea, does he?
What's
coming.
I think it's just going to come from
comedian
all angles.
Mark Maroon interviewed the president.
Yeah,
earlier
I mean,
today.
Ultimately, it's amazing and it's great for him, and I think it's great for podcasting because
it's certainly a validation.
The more people, you know,
as big as Arsenio now.
The more
Arsenio.
The fact that this is happening in podcasting legitimizes podcasting for everyone.
I don't, you know, I keep telling Lisa, my business partner, not to use the word podcast. Don't you feel like it's a little diminutive? You use it a lot.
I feel like it used to be, but I feel like
it's
grown.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people try to shorten it and they seem to be like casting, and that just sounds like bad.
There's no word
market
for it.
Talk.
That's the problem. There's no alternate.
I think podcasting
is cast footprints.
I think podcasting is the perfect word now. I stuck with it. I think if we tried to make it anything else, it would seem like we were trying to sound more important than we are.
I just think blogging is the same thing. And you even said
blogging,
that earlier.
Yeah.
Blogging was kind of like some guy in his jammies in his basement.
Right.
And you don't say the Huffington Post is a blog anymore.
No.
But, I mean, it is.
Well, yeah, if you read anything, you're like, oh, this is clearly still
a blog. This is not advanced. So I just feel like, but there is no better word. So you're right.
There just isn't the better word. Yeah. I mean, I think that's just what it is. And I think trying to rebrand it at this point would be confusing.
Trying for years.
You know, because honestly,
no success.
As much as we think podcasting has permeated culture.
Oh, it hasn't.
It hasn't.
17% of all Americans have listened ever to one podcast.
Someone asked me recently, like, so do you think the podcasting bubble has burst? I'm like, it hasn't even barely started.
Blow us up first, then we'll burst.
The great equalizer will be when getting a podcast is as easy for people as turning on the radio in their car.
I've been saying that for years.
Apple, iTunes took a couple of steps out of having to.
We're getting closer and closer.
You know,
we really
have to have a real player and like an Ogg Vorbis file.
Well, now everybody with a mobile device has a podcasting tool.
But it's still two steps. It's still like go into the app,
a button,
then go and find the thing. And people don't know. It's still overwhelming because they think it's
totally with you on that.
But when it starts to bleed over into, you know, when cars start going, oh, and this is your podcast channel.
Well, one of the reasons we started doing video and live video at that is I really wanted it to be like a TV station that you just turn on, or even a radio station you just turn on and it's always on. There's always something going on. You don't have to pick a show. It's just a continuous stream. And that's actually working pretty well. It's not working as well as I thought. I mean, it's still a fraction of our total audience. But that works. That works because it's hot and cold running podcast.
Right.
You just turn on the tap and something's going on. And if you're narrow enough, we're narrow enough that people know kind of what they're going to get. Right.
Right.
I think Netflix should do that too. Have a curated sort of like, you can have like celebrity curators, like Quentin Tarantino's
TMC just going all the time.
Yeah. And it just runs all the time. And you just go to Quentin Tarantino's stream and whatever the fuck movie's playing is playing, you know?
Yeah. Because really that's how people want to consume
TV. They could do that without Quentin Tarantino, but they should do it. They should.
But it's like celebrity curators.
Like celebrity playlists.
Yeah, that's the Turner Classic Movies. That's exactly what they do. And I turn that on all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because on the other side, the reason podcasting was a success is because it really recognized that people wanted to listen whenever they wanted to listen, wherever, on demand, right?
Yeah.
And that was the real success of podcasting. So this is kind of I think you need to do both.
The other thing I think Netflix should do is charge like $2 more a month and whatever special features exist for that movie, have access to that.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Netflix.
I miss
like
those.
An audio commentary.
That's
drop
the biggest
or
loss.
Like that. That's all they need to do. For $2 more, I'd pay it.
But I think people don't even do audio commentaries anymore. I think the directors they didn't want to do them.
It's dying.
It's a shame. I mean, that's the loss of with DVDs gone. But I agree. iTunes does that. They have iTunes extras. It's not the same.
I don't know. I don't know how well that's doing either. Maybe it's doing great. I just don't.
You know, I buy one when there's something there, like the last Wes Anderson movie. But it's not. It's usually like a few extra scenes.
Yeah.
I want to hear Wes' commentary all the way through it.
Yeah.
I want to hear what he did and why he did it, and that was the best thing. That was a couple of years we got that.
Yep.
And now it's gone.
That's why I still buy Blu-rays when they
the best
come out.
Commentary is the Godfather Blu-ray. They've got Coppola commenting on the first Godfather all the way through, where he says, "You know, take the gun, leave the cannoli." He made that up. Just to know that is awesome. That wasn't in the script.
That's great.
He made that up. It's little things like that. It's fabulous.
Well, Leo, you are welcome to come back as many times as you want.
Good. And I want you on our show sometime.
I would love to do your show. I mean, I feel like this has been building for years. Like we started communicating, and I've communicated with people from your team.
Yeah, we really want to get you
back
on
at G4, and then scheduling was always a pain in the ass. And I apologize, and
it's
more my fault than yours. But we'll make it work. But I would love to make it work.
Good.
Because
this was fun.
Will you please?
This is fun.
Okay, great.
And you can bring Mr. Cigar if you want.
I'll bring the cigar.
And it's Twizzlies.
It's my favorite Happy Days character.
You want some Twizzlies?
Twizzle Twatsy. That's good. It's a whole new character.
Twizzle Twat over here. All right. Enjoy your burrito, everyone. The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Once upon a beat. Remember those stories and fables that would capture your imagination and you couldn't wait to see how they would unfold? And now, when you read them as an adult, you think some of these old tales could use a fresh spin. We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remix, and reimagine for the kids in your life today. Join me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, as we spin up new tales in the New Kids and Family Podcast, Once Upon a Beat.
Yeah.
Wondry and Tinkercast are bringing you a jam-packed, music-filled weekly party where hip-hop and fables meet. It's Once Upon a Beat. Follow Once Upon a Beat on the Wondry app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now by joining Wondry Plus in the Wondry app or Wondry Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Once Upon a Beat.